This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Afghanistan is preparing for national elections in September, but there's an obstacle to successful democratic elections: Afghanistan's warlords. Some of these warlords were appointed to governorships by the American-backed interim government, but they now rule their provinces as private fiefdoms.
I traveled to Afghanistan for the Morning Edition series Democracy in the Balance. Today, a portrait of one powerful warlord, a ruler who harks back to an earlier time. The city of Herat in the western province of Herat is an ancient one. It flowered in the 15th century as part of the vast Persian Empire. Tall trees line its boulevards, minarets tilt precariously, and new parks are filled with playground equipment. It is the most prosperous city in Afghanistan.
I'm in the center of Herat, sitting on the back of a small carriage. It's drawn by a well-groomed horse, which is sporting fat red tassels that hang along its neck like roses. And the carriages embody a sort of sense of prosperity and even a graciousness that you feel throughout Herat.
The man behind this is Ismail Khan. His official title is governor. His critics call him tyrant. And his subjects, if you will, call him His Excellency, Amir Saheb, or respected lord. On this balmy spring evening, families wander among the gardens and tombs surrounding the city's historic Sufi shrine. Among them are a tight knot of supplicants. They rush forward when Governor Ismail Khan makes an appearance. I have lots of children and my husband is dead. You are a generous man. Please, she begs, help me find a home. Contrasted against this woman's dingy blue burqa edged in mud is Ismail Khan, a vision in white. Crisp white shirt and pants, a pure white beard, topped by an impeccably wrapped white and black checked turban. Surrounded by his entourage, including armed militiamen, Ismail Khan conducts himself in the manner of a potentate.
I will make it so. I will give you a house.
Basically, the governor of Herat is spending most of his time among the people.
Hulan Khatibi is the founder of Herat's only independent women's advocacy group. But even she, an educated professional, must also act the supplicant during Ismail Khan's weekly public assemblies if she wants government approval for her civic education and employment projects. Last year, Hulan Khatibi wanted to start a radio station just for women.
I had to approach him several times for getting permission, for just explaining him that it is something non-political. And it took me, at least 7 or 8 meetings with him.
Lawyer Rafiq Shahir is among the many educated people in Herat who would like to exercise a certain amount of political influence. He is head of Herat's Council of Professionals.
I admit that Ismail Khan does build up the city, but he hasn't managed to establish any government system to work. So if Ismail Khan were to disappear today, all the works will stop. Even the trees that have been planted will dry up because he has left no system in place.
Rafiq Shahir complains that the central government had been unwilling to take on Ismail Khan, only recently managing to pressure him into turning over the much-needed taxes to Kabul for use throughout Afghanistan. Rafiq Shahir is a rarity here, a critic of Ismail Khan's who's willing to take on the governor publicly. Sitting in his office at the Council of Professionals, Shahir recounts how 2 years ago he dared to campaign for a seat in the first National Assembly that elected Hamid Karzai president.
I was arrested and put in jail for 2 nights. I had my hands tied behind my back and they beat me. They also put a bomb in the house of one of the founding members of the Professionals Council.
Last year, the Afghan Independent Human Rights Commission opened an office in Herat. A much-talked-about story has it that at the grand opening, a reporter from the American-sponsored Radio Free Afghanistan had the nerve to press Ismail Khan on his own involvement in human rights abuses. The reporter was promptly roughed up by the emir's men and ordered to leave town. He did. At the human rights office, the outgoing head of the commission, Kadir Brahimi, says local journalists are still too scared to criticize the emir's government.
Someone in Kabul asked me what is the situation of freedom of expression in the west region of Afghanistan, and I said there is no problem. And the person was very, very, it was strange for him that why I am saying that there is no problem about freedom of speech in this region. And I explained that because the writer, they self-censor.
The international group Human Rights Watch has no such fear. It has put out reports slamming Ismail Khan for restricting press freedom, for trampling on women's rights. It charges at one point women caught walking alone on the street could be subjected to virginity tests. Women aren't allowed to work in shops and other public places. And then there is a tragic trend in Herat, dozens of women who have turned to setting themselves on fire as a means to suicide. Human Rights Watch compared Khan's autocratic rule to the Taliban. On any given night, one might see Ismail Khan riding through town on his white horse. He is recreating a legendary patrol by a long-ago emir. The horse ride also allows him to mingle with the people. It is nearly midnight when we finally get the call on an interview request. The emir is waiting. Come over now. Yeah. Under chandeliers in an opulent government ministry, fresh apples and pears are piled high, dishes brim with almonds, white raisins, and pistachios. Fragrant green tea is handed round.
If you had come 20 minutes ago, you would have seen hundreds of people with me. These people sitting here are the directors of the provincial departments. They fought against the Soviets and played big roles in liberating the country. Now they are playing big roles in improving the society.
Heratis, says Ismail Khan, are the most learned and sophisticated people in all of Afghanistan. He scoffs at the idea that women here are worse off than anywhere else in the country.
For example, in the university entrance exam, there wasn't a single girl from Kandahar province who passed. So for symbolic reasons, 7 girls were allowed into the university without passing any exams. In Herat, we have 750 girls studying at the university now.
As for human rights, I ask him, what about accusations that you intimidate your critics? It's something he doesn't exactly deny.
I'm wondering how there's so much focus on the human rights violations here. Afghanistan has human rights violations in other provinces, but no one focuses on that. And I am wondering how the press, the world, focus on very tiny, tiny issues here.
Last month, an assassination attempt on Ismail Khan led to a bloody clash with a rival commander, which left at least 16 dead and some claim 100. Among the dead was Ismail Khan's own son. The central government sent in 1,500 new National Army troops to contain the violence. The army troops are in Herat still. On some days, they can be seen marching on opposite sides of the street from Ismail Khan's militiamen. To see Herat and more, go to npr.org. Next week, disarming the warlords and how they are resisting and adapting to electoral politics.